Hi, Marcus here. I just need to apologise in advance for the sound quality on the following show. We were beset with technical issues, unfortunately. I hope it isn't too bad for you because it's certainly worth a listen.
This week on the Boag World Show, we explore how to develop content in a way that will improve your search engine rankings. This week's show is sponsored by Gather Content and Video Blocks. Hello and welcome to the Boag World Show, a podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul Boag and joining me as always on this week's show is Marcus. Hello Marcus.
Hello Paul, how are you today?
I am gorgeous. Actually, I'm slightly hysterical, but
you're
we'll come
gorgeous.
Back to that in a minute. I am gorgeous. Well, I've always been gorgeous, but I am slightly
gorgeous
hysterical
and
as well.
Lovely.
Yes, but before we get into why I'm hysterical, let's first of all welcome Andy Kinsey to the show. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Marcus.
It's been a little while since we've had you on the show, isn't it?
Yes, it's been well over a year, I think.
Cool. Well,
they all just blur together, the years now, though, don't you find? It's just like, you could have said 5, 8, 6 months. Just constant.
Yeah, it does feel
roller
forever
coaster
with the Boag World podcast. It just goes on and on.
It does.
Yeah, I was showing Paul the other day. I've got one of your shirts from, I think it was the first series.
Really? Wow.
Oh dear. That's just.
I forgot
very,
they even
very
existed.
Sad.
Yeah. So Paul. Why are you stressed? You shouldn't be stressed, unless obviously you've built up too much work while you were swanning around the Pacific or whatever you were doing.
Well, yeah, partly that, and partly I'm moving house. I've just moved house.
That's true.
It's always stressful, and I've moved house so that we can renovate our existing house. So at the moment, I'm paying a larger mortgage because we took out more money to do the house. And I'm also paying rent for 6 months while we do the building work. So as a result, I've taken on lots of work, which means I'm really busy. So this week alone, I'm going to see Comic Relief, the UK government, Shell, Centrica. It's like, it's just never ending. And then, of course, we're off to Barcelona.
Lots of showing off there, Paul. That's some big names.
Which
Comic Relief
moment
sounds interesting. What are you doing for them?
Oh, just a little talky thing. Nothing too exciting. And actually, that one's a freebie, so I'm not even getting paid for that.
Oh, no, a lot more work. You're not getting. Yes, we've just. I'm not going to say for whom, but we did some work that we loved for a client last year, and then they updated it themselves, and we've agreed to fix it for nothing.
It's just oh
like,
dear!
What did you do that for? But anyway, never mind. These things happen.
We all do work for free that we love. Let's be honest about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we do. This is the trouble. We get too invested in it, don't we?
A little.
So, I'm a bit worried about Barcelona there, Marcus.
Yes, because we're off there next week, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're going to a conference. I'm really looking forward to this. No, it's my second conference this year. I should go to more. I always say that. So I'm really looking forward to it. But then the Catalonians decided that... And also, it's in Barcelona, one of my favourite places in the world. But then, as I just started saying, the Catalonians decided that they were going to unilaterally leave Spain, and they're not allowed to do that. Their constitution says they can't, and that the Spanish government can force them not to do it. And I'm just worried that it's all going to reach a horrible climax when we're out there and we'll have to stay in a bunker and under the hotel and never be able to leave.
Well, from
that's if you get over
I think
there.
You might sorry Andy, what was that?
That's if you manage to get over there.
Might not even get there in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, from what I'm hearing, because I was speaking to Piero from T4, who had some friends that have just been out there, and he was saying that it's perfectly safe for I know that's boring and you don't want to hear that. You want to hear that it's some kind of war zone and that we're really brave for going out there. But actually, it's perfectly safe, but everything's closed. So
yeah,
we'll be...
they were having a general strike, weren't they?
So there you go.
I hope the hotels aren't closed. That would be rubbish.
Well, I imagine the conference would probably be cancelled if that was the case.
Yeah, so, so we if won't they're be having a general strike, eat anywhere, it might we be anyway.
Sorry, what was that, Andy?
If they're having a general strike, it might be cancelled anyway.
Exactly. I'm thinking that actually I might go out there and go on strike in sympathy and not give my talk or my workshop and then see if I can get paid anyway. What do you think?
Well, as a member of the board of Smashing, I think they'd really appreciate that, Paul.
Oh, yeah. I forgot
that. You have obligations now, Paul. You're not allowed to do that sort of thing. But I've got to drive over the border from Catalonia into whatever the next one down is. And I don't know, I'm imagining guns and being searched and all that kind of thing.
Well, when I was in India, there was some dispute between two different states of India and we had to cross the border and they weren't allowing traffic across the border. So we had to walk about a mile and a half from one side of the border to the other. So we got dropped off on the taxi one side and had to walk across to the other and collect a taxi on the other side. So it'd be something like that, just traipsing with all your luggage. That's what I imagine.
I imagine I'll just be driving along the motorway and I won't know that I'm moved from one state to another. Or county.
Yeah, but that's
what
do
they call them out
there?
Departments.
Departments.
That's what regions. They call them in France, isn't it?
Is it? Oh,
yeah.
There you go.
They're regions in Spain.
Regions, right?
Yeah.
So, Andy, we ought to introduce Andy properly because it may yes. well be that people don't know Andy because he has been on the show before, but it's been a little while. Andy, tell us what you're up to these days because last I knew you were some Labour councillor and weren't having a lot to do with the web, but that's not your real background, is it?
No. So, well, my brand was SEO Andy, still technically is. Mm-hmm. I'm a digital marketing consultant by background, as you say, been a Labour councillor for 4 years, standing down next year because I have a brain tumour, which is now very public. And as this goes out,
cool.
There will be a video on my website explaining all of that. And the reality is that I'm going out there and I generally work with charities such as Social Adventures and the Grafton Centre. Excuse me. And I'm going out there doing advocacy work generally at the moment, talking about brain tumours and whatnot to basically get people more okay with talking about brain tumours and the stuff around them, as well as working with charities.
So are you still doing SEO type stuff and marketing stuff with charities as well, or is
yes.
it just
yeah.
purely a voluntary so, thing?
No. So that is the bulk of my work with charities is the SEO side of the work. So the vast majority the larger paying part of my work is with because of the restrictions of my health, I have one or two large paying clients, and then I work with charities who don't pay quite as much because obviously charities
right.
don't have so much money, but it's all
yeah.
digital marketing work and SEO work.
Oh, cool. Oh, well, I should have checked with you before the show whether you were actually talking about the brain tumor or not, because that was stupid of me, because we've been chatting about it for a little while. Do you want to give people an idea? Because, setting aside... obviously the emotion of it and the experience of it and stuff like that, it's having an impact on your work as well. So I'm kind of quite interested because, you know, you were an independent SEO specialist and then you discover you've got a brain tumor. How did that affect work and your career and your financial situation and what you were able to do and all that kind of stuff?
So Well, as you say, we've been talking about it for a while. So, but starting from the ground up, the reality for me was I was, or have been, very lucky in that because I've been a local councillor, I've had a second income, as it were, which has really helped. Whereas most people who are an independent freelancer, as it were, don't have that to fall back on. The reality for me is that my symptoms mean that I am standing down from that, and I am going to face what every freelancer is facing, but I have time to plan for that. So the financial comeback from it is basically you have no income, and how do you face that? So things like the migraines that I have 24 hours a day, and that spike up, that mean that I need time off work every month, or for a few days every month, that can just appear at any time, is a real issue. And I have permanent double vision and things like this that can really impact on the work that I do, or the type of work that I do, or how I do work. So I, for instance, I can write things down one day and then I won't be able to read my own notes the next day, but I'll be able to read it again the day after. So there are certain things that really have an impact on me. So it's just little things that I have to educate clients or potential clients towards. And that's something that, although the video itself on my website isn't gonna say, it doesn't say that, there is a FAQ section on the website that says that. And when I go into meetings with potential clients, I'm very open with them about this is the scenario and this is how it's going to affect you. And then as to there's a number of clients like Social Adventures in Salford that I've been extremely open with as I've gone through this whole process, because they've been with me the whole time of turning around and going, this is where things are up to and this is how it's changed. Because if you, as anyone with a long-term health condition will tell you, is if you're not open with the people you work with, then, and then you suddenly turn around and drop a bombshell on them that you've got an illness, you're going to have a problem at the end of the day. Because, for example, in 6 months' time, I might need treatment. The reality is I hope that really doesn't happen, but it might happen. The reality for me right now is it looks like for the foreseeable future, it might be 3 or 4 days a month that I can't work. Which is doable. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts. The big thing for me and anyone in this situation is the financial pressure it puts on you and not knowing what the future holds.
I mean, that's the you are basically living the ultimate fear of most people that are freelancers, that they get some long-term medical condition that actually impacts their health and their ability to do the job. What have you, you know, is there any advice that you can give, any lessons you've learned, things you wish you'd done or things that you've done well that would have helped, you know, would have helped anybody else facing that kind of situation?
I think the two big pieces of advice I would give anyone in this situation is, number one, like I said, is don't shy away from it or hide it away. From your current clients in particular, is as soon as you know enough about it and you yourself have come to terms with it, that's a really important part of this. Is if you are struggling to come to terms with it, go and get help and talk to people yourself about it first. But you've got to be open with your clients and your potential clients. Even if someone emails, I mean, I'm being very open about it on the web and in public about this, but you don't have to do that. If someone sends you an email and it's a big project that's going to be 12 months long, for instance, send them an email back and just say, look, this is the situation. Is this something you can cope with? Or take them for a coffee and explain the situation to them in person. That might be even better. because you know, things get misconstrued in an email anyway, but you've got to be upfront with them. That is the reality of it. And the other bit of advice is find someone in the industry that you talk to about this that has got huge amounts of industry experience. I mean, for instance, I turned around to you and just said, can I have a talk to you? I mean, I've known you for years, and probably can't turn around to someone like you, but if they can just send someone an email and just say, I've got this issue, can I have a quick email conversation with you? They tend to find that most people are receptive to that. And even if it's just a quick week-long backwards and forwards, most people answer to that. And I myself am quite open to those conversations because I've been through most of this process so far. You know, so if people want to email me or send me a message on Facebook, I'm quite open to that.
And definitely, you know, take Andy up on that because, it is hugely difficult facing these kinds of problems, especially when you're an independent freelancer and, you know, you've got no one else to talk to, nobody else to bounce ideas around with. You really need somebody out of the situation to talk to. And equally, you know, I'm here as well. I'm quite happy to chat with people in those kinds of situations as I was with Andy. Not that I've got any experience in it. Andy's got experience, which makes a big difference, doesn't it? So what's your kind of hope in terms of from a work perspective that you'll just be able to carry on as you are, or are you looking to move into certain types of work, or what's the plan?
Over the next few months in particular, I'm kind of building up my portfolio in terms of what I'm trying to do, mainly around charity organisations, mainly because, as you'll know yourself, they tend to be more understanding, and the same with NGOs in particular, because they tend to be more understanding of people with disabilities, to be fair to them. And they tend to be, although they're commercially minded, obviously, they tend to be less, shall we say, targeted around deadlines, for want of a better phrase. And when you could turn around and need to take a week off for one reason or another, they tend to be really quite understanding on that one. So I'm trying to build up a bit of a portfolio around that, and also more of a way of, as I said, doing advocacy work and hopefully finding a way of making that not necessarily pay for itself, but finding a way of ensuring that it can help to at least help those organisations, not necessarily that I'm doing work for directly, but other organisations get a benefit from it as well. So it kind of becomes circular in what it's doing rather than a single dimension to it, if that makes sense.
I've got so much respect for the way that you've dealt with this, Andy, and you know, it's an incredibly difficult position. And it's good to see you, because of course you stepped back for quite a long time from the SEO kind of stuff because you were doing the council stuff. So to see you building that back up again is really great, which is good for the SEO community, because you've got a huge amount that you've given to it over the years, and you've shared your expertise a lot, and it's good to see you continuing to do that. So on that basis, let's talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about today, which is kind of SEO, if I'm honest. The whole season is on content marketing, and that content marketing is becoming probably the biggest way of increasing your visibility online and how you're perceived. But a big part of that, obviously, is appearing on search engines and ranking well on the content that you're producing, etc. So I wanted to spend an episode talking about this kind of thing. And I wanted to kick off in particular with just some resources that we can point you at where you can go away and learn a little bit more about this. The one that I want to share a couple with you and then see if Andy's got some stuff that he fancies sharing on this as well in terms of resources. One that I found absolutely invaluable is Yoast, yoast.com. So that's Y-O-A-S-T. .com, and he's best known for his WordPress plugin that you can use to improve the SEO on your site. But in actual fact, he's got a great blog there as well, and a whole section of that blog is dedicated to SEO basics, and it's really good, sensible best practice there, you know, of modern SEO rather than, you know, old school SEO, which I was always a bit suspect of. So it's very much about producing quality content, targeting that content well, all of those kinds of things. The other post that I did say Yoast.com, didn't I? The other post that I wanted to point you at is one of my own posts, because of a Smashing Magazine article I wrote years ago, which was quite slamming of the SEO sector. I've got a bit of a reputation as being someone who's quite anti-SEO, which is not at all true. What I want to share with you is a post that I wrote back in 2013, boagworld.com/marketing/perhaps-seo-isn't-all-bad. So there'll be links to these in the show notes. And it's an article where I kind of share some experimentations that I ran to see whether SEO had value, and the results and the things that I learned from doing that experience. So those are a couple of resources that I wanted to point you at. Andy, where do you turn to, you know, or where should people start learning about SEO?
There are lots of blogs out there. Anyone who searches for the words SEO blog on Google will find literally thousands of blogs. The basic, the key blogs to turn to, the number one place I would turn to is Moz, which is now at moz.com. It was seomoz.org, I think, back in the day. It's now moz.com, as I said, which covers all the basics and also lots of advanced stuff on there. The key things to look out for on there is each week the experts on there do a video called Whiteboard Friday, which tends to be more advanced stuff but is really easy to get into. The other really great one to look at is the Google blog, which is the Google Webmaster blog even, which again has lots of videos on it but looks at individual topics generally, anything from domains and how websites link to each other to dispelling myths basically. And again, as I say, there's lots of videos on there, and it links over to their YouTube channel as well. And what I'll do probably is I'll send you the links to those. The other ones to look out to, just to name a few of them, is HubSpot, SEM Rush, Kissmetrics, and Search Engine Land are all really good. But there are a fair few. I'll send you a link to basically 9 or 10 of them, Paul.
That'd be great.
You can put them all on the rundown, as it were, because they are all worth sharing, these ones.
Good.
Rather than just name them.
Oh, well, that's great. That's great. I mean, it's just really nice to have some resources that we can point people out, because I'm very conscious with this season we're trying to cover quite a broad range of subjects. And so, you know, the whole idea is to just kind of maybe inspire people a little bit to dig into this. And SEO is one of those areas that a lot of UX people in particular are quite negative about. And I think if they start digging into some of these resources, they might be surprised that actually it's very user experience orientated in a lot of ways, because ultimately it's about using the terminology and phrases that people use every day. Okay, before we get into, I've got some questions for Andy, but before we get into those, I just want to do our first sponsor, which is VideoBlocks, that are supporting us on the show this season, which is wonderful. So VideoBlocks is a part of a service that offers a variety of different things. They offer imagery, video and audio. Unsurprisingly, the video blocks bit is the video part of their offering. And imagery and video and audio and multimedia generally are so important part of the modern web, whether it's sound effects for your podcast production, video backgrounds for your website, or hero images for your website. And often the trouble is, in my experience, that those kinds of elements of a site often get dropped due to cost, or their kind of shortcuts are taken with them and they're not great and they don't really live up to their potential. And that's where a service like VideoBlocks gets really interesting, because basically you can get really high quality stock imagery, but for a fraction of the normal cost, because it's a subscription based thing. So you can use it with client after client after client. And it works out much cheaper than buying, you know, individual stock video. But you get access to this huge range of different stuff. So you're almost always going to find what it is that you're after as well. So they've got a huge stock video library, including obviously high definition footage, but they've also got things like After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, etc. And not only do they, like, I think it's 115,000 different videos that you can choose between, but on top of that, they also have a marketplace with millions of other clips as well that you can use for whatever it is that you're producing, and they're heavily discounted because you've signed up to this subscription model. So there's the free stuff that comes as part of the subscription, and then there's the heavily reduced stuff in the marketplace as well. All the content, wherever you buy it, whatever you end up with, is royalty free, so you can use it as you want for commercial purposes or personal projects. And they're always adding new stuff, so it's a library that's growing all the time. So you can get a free 7-day trial of it to check out, you know, what they've got in the library by going to videoblocks.com/BoagWorld. Okay, so let's dive into some questions for Andy in regards to SEO. Andy, the first thing I wanted to talk to you is about how profoundly SEO has changed over recent years. And I was wondering, and I think a lot of us have got quite out-of-date views of what SEO is all about. So I'm interested to hear your perspective on how would you describe SEO today? What, give us the elevator pitch.
Well, the elevator pitch. Well, should we start with what SEO isn't? And that might help to clarify it. A few seconds ago, you were talking about how UX people are often confused about this. Mm-hmm. So, if you think about SEO as what Google does, and then you clarify that as to what Google as a search engine alone does. So, mm-hmm. We're not talking about Google Shopping, we're not talking about Gmail, we're not talking about any of that stuff. We're just talking about the search element and what you see or what it gives you when you land on a search results page and what it takes to get onto that page.
Mm.
So that is search engine optimization. Anything else outside of that, so Google Plus, Gmail, the Google Shopping, and anything else is digital marketing related. It falls outside of search engine optimization. So stuff like your content, your links, your site optimization, and your site history all fall into SEO. Anything else, other things are included in that, but anything else generally falls into digital marketing, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So on that basis then, traditionally, a lot of people have got this view of SEO. It's, you know, it's keyword stuffing. It's, you know, it's building the website in a particular way to encourage Google to look at it, and all of these kind of slightly dodgy approaches. I mean, what does it basically boil down to today? What is it that you're trying to achieve to get yourself ranked well on Google?
So the big things that have changed really boil down to two big things, or three big things really. So the two big things around keywords, which is what you've just really talked about there. So instead of a single keyword or two keywords, so instead of the idea of just searching for the likes of SEO or the likes of content, then we're now looking at long tail keywords or key phrases. So we're looking at things like SEO consultant in Manchester, or web designer in Bath, or web design in London, or web design for charity organisation, and things like this. So that, it's much more specific, and it's much more, it's considered more of a high quality keyword, or high quality key phrase, I should say, and it's what's called a long tail keyword, as I say, and that's really what people are targeting, and other key phrases are born of that. So, and it's what's found naturally in a sentence, if that makes sense, and it's why you find that those kind of terms are found in headlines as well as in your content. The other big change is a much more focused approach to local SEO. So rather than, again, the approach of just searching for SEO, which could be anywhere in the world, as I say, you look for SEO consultant in Manchester, it's focused on the Manchester as an area, but you then might find, for example, I lived in Hyde and I live in Denton, I live in Tameside, it might be SEO consultant in Tameside. Or someone who lives in, and it's that hyper-localism, and the same for retail shops. For example, craft shop in Hyde is much more akin to something people would search for on a mobile phone than anything else. And when you consider 87% of people with a mobile smartphone make at least one search on their phone every day, you've got to consider that local SEO is a huge, huge impact. And the other big change, and this is something I remember talking about on the last podcast I was on with you, and I can't remember who it was, but I was seriously challenged on whether this was going to ever happen, because we'd been talking about it for years and it hadn't happened, but it has. It has happened over the past year or two since I've been on.
So you're basically going
I'm going back, and I've got to beat you with a stick on this one.
Okay, go on.
It's micro formats, a rich snippet of content, and things like recipes and local information that now are appearing in Google on a very regular basis, on things like Google's knowledge graph and star ratings and things like that, are really having an impact, not only on Google search, but when you consider Siri and stuff like this, are really having a huge impact on SEO and how people are absorbing that content. Especially when you then consider that Google's AMP way of viewing pages and Facebook's way of viewing pages within its own browser, which I know isn't SEO, but it's all built around this AMP browser idea, is a very important way of doing things. So it all makes a huge difference.
Marcus, have you come across this idea of AMP? Is that something you're familiar with?
Yeah, totally. Not a lot of love for it in the office, I have to say. But
there isn't
just
a lot
one
of love
of
for it
things.
Around at all, and it's not been very well.
It's I hate it when sites show me AMP thing, but anyway, so. All personal taste.
I feel like one of you should explain it for those newbies that are listening.
Yes. So AMP is essentially a way of formatting the content on your websites in a very, very stripped down format that is
logo
pretty much,
usually, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like Google's built-in version of Instapaper or something like that is kind of one way of looking at it. But the thing is when someone searches on it, searches on, I don't know, say one of my blog posts, and if my site offered an AMP version of it, then Andy, this is right, isn't it? It's preloading it in the background. So when you click on it, it pretty much instantly comes up. So it's incredibly fast, but horrible.
Yeah, AMP stands for Accelerated Mobile Pages.
Yeah.
And it's a coming together of Facebook and Google, basically, to make pages load much faster. And whilst you kind of understand it, it's kind of... it doesn't make pages look very good. The only people that seem to be benefiting anyway from this are Facebook and Twitter to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see Google getting any benefit from this at all, which is a bit weird. The only benefit from a user's point of view is I'm yet to see a single advert pop up over the top of an AMP.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it does seem to strip out all of that kind of stuff as well. So, you know, perhaps it's not all bad. So, this season we're talking about, you know, content marketing and producing content. So, let's take, for example, writing a blog post, right? When I sit down to write a blog post, or when a listener sits down to write a blog post, what should they be thinking about from an SEO perspective? You know, what are the big things to consider?
In my case, it's usually absolutely nothing at all. So I've got my ears pricked about this because I don't know. Help me out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, from an SEO perspective, or from anyone who's creating any kind of content, that I would usually advise going through. I'd call them I've got six steps, and you could strip it down to five if you really wanted to, or you could expand it if you wanted to. But if you go through these steps, and I'll send them across to you as well, Paul, so in a bit of a neat format that I've scribbled down because we were talking about this earlier. I'll send them across to you. You'll see that actually these are the building blocks of any content creation. And you could literally build out a massive piece of content from this, and I'm sure this is basically what you do when you write a book as well, Paul. Mm. So the first step is identifying what the core idea of your content is and your audience segmentation. And then, so if you can't write down what your core idea is in two sentences, then your idea for content is a no-go. You literally need to drop it there and then. For a blog post in particular, or for a short video, just stop it there and then. If it's a book, obviously you can go for a full paragraph if you really want to. Write a synopsis if you book all you want. In terms of your audience, there's four categories that you need to consider. Your readers or your customers, this is the people who see it. The people who are going to share your content, these aren't necessarily, you need to remember, these aren't necessarily the people who are going to read or buy your content, but the people who are most likely to share it. So consider when you're on Facebook, you don't always look at a piece of content that someone's shared, but you might like it or share it. So you've got to remember that. It's about 90% of the things that are shared on Facebook someone hasn't actually interacted with. They're just sharing that piece of content. Bloggers, these are people who have an interest in what you're doing and are most likely to link to that piece of content, so you need their involvement at some point. The influencers in your industry, so that's people like you and me, Paul, who actually have some kind of say over what's going on in an industry and have an ability to get a message out there. and actually you want these people to be involved in, especially if it's a big piece of content, you want them to be involved in that work. So it might be that you want to get a quote from them, because you then know if that person is actually going to share that piece of content. So we were talking about tools earlier, and two great tools to use for this kind of audience segmentation is BuzzSumo. So you can look up similar kind of content and the audiences that go with it, and how much that those pieces of content have been shared on various platforms. And you can also go and steal some ideas, to be honest. And the other one, and I don't, you may have used this, Paul, but I know many people haven't, is the YouGov profiler tool. And this is basically...
No, I haven't come across that.
It's YouGov.com/profile. I'm not sure, I'll double check. And basically you put in... so, for example, you put in, say, the Labour Party, and it'll give you the breakdown of the average demographics of that group. So you can do all sorts with it. It's really powerful, and you can break it down even further than that if you sign in. That's just a... And you can do it for almost anything. So it's a really powerful tool. The second point is you then need to go and talk to the bloggers and influencers, so that you can get ideas from them mainly, and you want their ideas, and you want their buying into your idea for what you're writing, especially if it's a big piece of content. Because if you get their ideas, they'll buy into your idea and are more likely to share it. Again, that's really important, because if you get bloggers with an audience or influencers with an audience that are going to share your content is going to be successful. Number three is you build your content idea out, again using tools like BuzzSumo, Reddit, and Mention. But the thing to remember here is, now that you've expanded your idea in part two, you're expanding it again, but you need to remember that from point one, your audience and your demographics have already been set. But this doesn't mean that you shouldn't write down every idea you find to keep for a later post or to use elsewhere. Because as someone who's writing content on a specific thing, you can spin it off into something else later and use other ideas in a different post, in a different way, or in a different format. So you can use the same idea repeatedly on a different website. So, for example, if I'm writing about local SEO, I write it in a certain way on my website for my specific audience. But if I'm writing it on your website, Paul, it's going to be in much more detail than it is for my own audience, because my own audience is for small business owners and charities, whereas yours is much more technical. So, any questions there, Paul? It sounded like you had a question.
No.
I'm looking at the YouGov thing. That's pretty amazing. Stunning, the amount of detail they've got on there. It looks like you need to kind of log in and register to get more detail, but...
But it's free to register.
Worth a look.
So, number four is then, once you've got your ideas down and your semblance of a blog and how you're going to lay it out, you then, once again, you go back to your one or two bloggers or to one or two of your audience, double check that your content is going to work, and you listen in detail to what they're telling you about your ideas, because it's no good ignoring them at this point. You need to crowdsource that knowledge, especially for a big video that you're pushing out, or a big blog, or especially if it's a book, as Paul will tell you, because if you don't crowdsource that knowledge, you're going to have a flop on your hands and no one's going to share your book or your blog. The next bit is write or create your content. Now, the reason I'm saying write or create is specifically because I, for example, and in recording this podcast, I know Paul does the exact same thing, is I write and create things and then I hand them off to other people to tidy them up. And Paul is doing the exact same thing with this podcast. So we are recording this podcast, and Paul doesn't have the skills to edit this podcast. So we're handing them off to experts to do that for us. You have the skills to write that blog or that book, fantastic, and then you hand them off to someone who's got the skills to make it perfect for you. And that is exactly what you should do. Is if you've not got the time or skills to make it perfect at the end of it, after you've written a piece of content or filmed something, you hand it off to someone who's got those skills, and then you get it back to approve that content, and you then proof that content yourself or get someone else to do it for you. Mm. And it will be the ideal piece of content. And you may have to move one or two things around that you didn't think were in the right place. But it means it takes the legwork out of it for you, having, say, recorded a podcast or video or written that piece of content. And all you've got to do is go back from an SEO point of view and double check everything, make sure the titles are right, make sure the pictures are in the right place and have all the right tags on them. But you're then ready for point number six, which is publishing your content. And publishing your content is probably the more tricky thing to do, because literally there are thousands of places you could do this.
Yeah.
Do you do it on your own website, which in 99% of cases is usually where you do it? Or do you do it on somewhere like BuzzFeed, Instafeed, what am I on about? Listicle, Medium, LinkedIn, Quora? Or do you ask someone like Paul if they'll post it on their website, or myself? Or do you turn around to a magazine and ask them if they'll publish your article? And the reality is if you send it to someone like myself or Paul or a magazine, if you don't hear back in a week or two, you can follow it up if you want. But usually if you've not heard back, move on. Because generally, you can harass us all you want. We're not going to answer you if your article isn't of standard. And, you know, I can tell you now, me and Paul probably get 100 emails a week saying, can we post on your website? And the reality is we don't have time to answer you. Or we don't have time to answer you all, I should say. If your article is amazing, we will answer you. If your article is slapdash and written in broken English, or your email is, we're not answering you. And
I'm even worse than that, Andy. If someone writes to me out of the blue, I just presume it's a mass email they're sending out to lots of different people, and I don't even look at it. I do have guests posts, but they're from people that I know or have contacted me in some very personal way, you know, where I know that it's valid. So it's not always a reflection of you know, whether the post is good or not. It's simply that I don't do it very often. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge issue to this idea of getting posts on other places. I think is important thing to do, but I think you've got to do that more through networking than anything else. Yeah, but what I find really interesting from what you just ran through there, is that what you're describing there is good practice in digital marketing. It's good practice in content creation content strategy. It's good practice in UX because it's defining your audience and catering specifically to your audience. So search engine optimization really is just about, you know, good practice in other sectors these days as much as it is anything else.
The other thing that comes back through it is, as you were just saying about getting your post on other websites, it's also about that network that you build up through it as well. And like we were saying earlier with my help, is you reach out to someone and you gain their trust. And in through doing that, you can also ask someone about, with the UX stuff as well, you can ask them, what do you think of this element of my website? Because that can have as much impact on SEO as it can on someone's user experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if someone can't get through a certain page on your website, then it's going to have a detrimental effect on where that page ranks on Google as well, because that page never gets seen.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, let's take a break, just quickly talk about our next sponsor, and then I want to circle around and talk about a couple of apps and any recommendations you have as well. I mean, you've mentioned some apps, Andy, but there's a specific area that I want to talk to you about in a minute. But first of all, let's talk about Gather Content, as we're talking about apps, who is supporting this entire show. The more I look at Gather Content and the more I've had to do with it over the years, the more awesome I think their app is. Getting and managing content that you need for your website, your app, or even social media campaigns absolutely sucks. It's really difficult to do. It's frustrating. You've got multiple stakeholders, all of which are supposed to provide content, never provide it on time, provide it in the wrong format. It's just frustrating. So with Gather Content, you can write, review, and approve content all in one place. You not only can gather the written content, but you can also gather and manage assets as well that go alongside a project. So and then what you can do is you can actually, within Gather Content, you can review that content, you can edit it, you can discuss it with stakeholders, you can also set up a whole approval process that's customized to your organization of, you know, what workflow that content has to go through before it ends up on the site. So you can make sure that people you know, the quality is maintained, but you can also make sure that people know what that they're supposed to deliver and when they're supposed to deliver it, because it's all managed within this one app. You can agree on roles and responsibilities and the process it goes through. There's so much more I'd like to tell you about Gather Content, but we've got the whole season, so that's, I don't need to rush it. But suffice it to say, go and check it out. If you're working on any projects which require the management of large amounts of content. So you can find out more about them by going to gathercontent.com/BoagWorld. You could get a 30-day free trial, no need for a credit card or anything like that. You can just have a play with it, and I highly recommend that. Okay, Andy. One of the things that I think in my writing process that I spend quite a lot of time thinking about is the way, the terminology that people might use when they're thinking about a subject. So let's say I'm writing, well, I've got an upcoming post that I'm going to write on card sorting. Okay. And you know, there are lots of kind of things that somebody might search on related to card sorting, and we talked about those long tail keywords that you were talking about earlier. And so I want to use the phrases and terminology that they use. Now I've got certain ways that I have kind of cobbled together to find out what that terminology will be, so that I can reflect back their own mental model, their own thinking in what I write, which obviously is going to help my SEO rankings as well. But I'm interested in what kind of key phrase tools you use for researching, you know, what phrases people actually use.
So it honestly depends how much time you have to put into something.
And, yeah.
There are basically two levels you can go to with this, and there's the very basic level, which is if you're rushing out a quick blog post, which is you basically just use the tools and nothing else. And there's the very upper end, which is if I was working with a client and they were paying top dollar and you were sat there with them and you had all the time in the world and you could get access to all of their clientele and lots of their customers, basically. So if we just start with the basic tools for a second.
Yeah, because that's going to be more on my level, I think, the basic tools. But yeah.
Yeah, well, but you will have done lots of the top end stuff as well, just by default, because it's just what we do naturally.
Right.
So in terms of the tools, the top five or six tools that I use, for instance, are the SEMrush is a really good tool to use. you get a few free goes at it every day, but it's a paid tool. There's Google Keyword Planner, but it's hit and miss, as everything seems to be with Google these days because of its restrictions. But it's based around AdWords, so it tends to be really quite good. But it's based on what's called a normalized set, so it's kind of wishy-washy data. It's based out of 100. You're never going to be deadly accurate with it. The other tool from Google to look at, and I find this much more interesting from an SEO point of view, and if you have an inkling about data and where things are going and you can match it up with your own Google Analytics data, you'll find it much more interesting. It's the Google Trends data. Because you can compare phrases in it. And I think it's google.com/trends, and you can compare it within countries as well. And it'll give you information within cities within that country as well. So if you search for the likes of, say, coffee, and then you search for coffee maker and coffee brewer, and you can compare those three against each other, and you could compare brands as well, and you can see the peaks and troughs of those and how they've grown or shrunk over time and which periods in the year and the seasonality of them. That allows you then to plan across the year, or whether actually if they're going down, whether you need to stop using certain keywords and key terms completely on your website. Which for me is fantastic, because that, so a few years ago, for instance, SEO was a really dodgy word to ever use in the industry, because it was just such a dirty word, because everyone was like, oh, it's black hat, which is why I started calling myself a digital marketer. And now it started going back up again because everyone has cleaned up their act, because Google has clamped down that much on all the bad stuff that was going on, that everyone that was doing bad stuff has cleaned up, basically. And you can see on Google that trend going back up. The other two tools are Ahrefs, again, which you get a few free goes, but it's a paid tool, very similar to SEMrush, but it's really quite good. And BuzzSumo, again, seems to be a tool that's popping up quite a lot in my list today, but it's a really good tool. And again, it's another one where you can look at the content, again, that pops up in there and gives you an ability to go through that and say, actually, these are the common terms that pop up in there. So those are mine. I don't know if you've got any, Paul, on your list.
Yeah. There's a couple of tools that I use. There's a Chrome extension, which basically, when you do a Google search, just, you know, in normal Google search, it adds at the top an idea of the volume of that search, how often it's searched on. So that I often use that to identify more better performing keywords. And then there's another tool that I signed up to for a while ago, which is called Cognitive SEO. And that essentially does a whole load of stuff that a lot of it I don't even understand, if I'm entirely honest, because it's probably a bit heavyweight. But it's got...
Most of these tools are.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I don't know what... It's so many graphs and stuff. But one of the things that it does include is keyword research tools, so you can type in different keywords and see how they perform against each other. And then what you can do is, once you've written a blog post, you can then put... Say if I picked a keyword like, I don't know, card sorting, for example, and I've searched on that and it said that's quite a well performing keyword, you know, a lot of people search on it, but it also says it, whether it's very competitive or not, you know, whether it's a hard one to rank for. And then it'll go a step further, is once you've written the post for it, you can paste that post into the tool and it will tell you your likelihood of ranking, you know, on that keyword based on a whole load of criteria. Whether it's accurate or not, I'm not an expert, but I got good price on it, so I'm playing with it, and it seems to, it's at least making me see, if nothing else, these tools make you think about this stuff, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. As long as it's making you think about it, and the other, I'm guessing it just makes you feel better, that one, Paul.
I love the idea.
I've never used it, but I'm guessing it makes you feel better.
It does. Sorry,
so something that came out of that. I love the idea of being able to test your website on phrases that you shouldn't really be using anymore, because there's a lot of copy on the Headscape site that's just been hanging around for about 5 years, and it's probably quite out of date from a sort of terminology that people use point of view. So yeah, I need to pull my finger out and get on with it.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're pretty much there. We're running out of time, and I don't want to drag on the show too long. Andy, it's always great to have you on the show, and it's great to have you back in the digital marketing community. Drop all that, you know, that social good politics stuff. Get back to digital. That's what matters. Although even now you're working with charities. You're too nice. That's your trouble, Andy.
Well, you know. What can I say? Yeah, I just like being nice to people, Paul.
Yeah, see, that's not something I really understand, if I'm honest. Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
I do. After the high quality of last week, I'm going to have to go downhill a bit here, which is, why is a swordfish's nose 11 inches long? If it were 12 inches long, it would be a foot.
Uh-huh.
No.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Well, I did ask for more jokes, please, folks. Jokes, please, folks. That rhymes. Well.
Must do better.
Sorry?
You must do better.
Must do better. Yeah. I know. So, that's this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've got a little bit of insights into SEO and digital marketing out of that, and hopefully it helps inform some of the stuff, especially the blogging that you're doing. Next week on the show, we're going to talk about collaborative content, working on the creation of content with other people. Tune in for that one. We've got Ellen from Clear Left joining us, who's a content specialist over at Clear Left, so it's going to be really good to have her on the show talking about that kind of thing. But until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Oh, my God.